Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Today is April Tuesday, not the day of the week, but the day after April Fool's Day. Today, perhaps a sobering antidote to fools, jesters, and certain extant presidents. Abraham Lincoln described yesterday's Fool's Holiday quite darkly in the first part of a famous apophthegm. You can fool some of the people all of the time. A deadly axiom that currently preoccupies the USA, never more dangerously than now in this time of plague, death, and witless misdirection and narcissistic deceit at the highest level of plague center. Perhaps the most grotesque and macabre April Fool's joke, fortunately rescinded, was the announcement on Friday the 13th that Easter Sunday was the prime day of resurrection to fill the nation's churches despite the Pangolian plague and then go back to work in mass martyrdom to save the economy and Wall Street. This from our very own two-headed Nero Caligula, who also counts as victory, a very good job, he called it. If only 100 million Americans die from COVID-19, instead of a projected maximum of 200 million. It just makes you want to howl, which is what today's broadcast is all about. 63 years ago, on April 3rd, 1957, the American Civil Liberties Union announced that it would defend Allen Ginsberg's poem and book, Howl, against obscenity charges. The U.S. Customs Department had found howl in so many words unsuitable for American eyes, but ultimately lost the case in court. At Howell's obscenity trial in San Francisco in June 1957, nine literary connoisseurs supported its publication, and the judge pronounced it of, quote, redeeming social importance, unquote, and could be freely sold in the USA. A vital victory for freedom of speech and the right of protest against sexual and political oppression, poet Andrew Spacey wrote. Poets are damned, but they are not blind, poet William Carlos Williams wrote in the introduction to the original 1956 publication of Howl. This poet, Ginsberg, Williams wrote, sees through and all around the horrors he partakes in the very intimate details of his poem. Ginsberg, who died in 1997 at the age of 71, he was born in 1926, 30 years before Howl, was one of America's great poets, and in his own poetic way, a major hint of the nation's default. Ginsberg said his debt to Walt Whitman, considered America's ultimate poet, was immense, and attributed his own corresponding renown to both being heroes, quote-unquote, of the intensely persecuted gay revolution. Ginsberg implicitly included Jesus Christ as also a major influence. The temptation to make this period of epidemic and isolation more amiable and tolerable, but it is yet a period of disease and death by a breath or a touch, of hard truths and bitter realities. Ozzie and Harriet, this is not, though it is unavoidably reflective in our communal plight of personal segregation. We might consider the basic kindness and quiet wisdom of everybody's neighbor, Fred Rogers. Ginsberg did not need to write another word after Howl to be cast among the immortals, but of course he did write. Today I will read the first part of Howl, the shrieking heart of Ginsberg's three-part opus. I follow that with a selection from Walt Whitman's Iliad of America, Leaves of Grass, which was originally self-published 101 years before Ginsberg's Howl in 1855. And after that, a poem from Astoria poet Christopher Kramer, Reaching for Ginsberg. Howl by Allen Ginsberg for Carl Solomon. I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical, naked, dragging themselves through the Negro streets at dawn, looking for an angry fix. Angel-headed hipsters burning for the ancient heavenly connection to the starry dynamo in the machinery of night, who poverty and tatters and hollow-eyed and high sat up smoking in the supernatural darkness of cold water flats floating across the tops of cities contemplating jazz, who bared their brains to heaven under the L and saw Mohammedan angels staggering on tenement roofs illuminated, who passed through universities with radiant cool eyes hallucinating Arkansas and Blake-like tragedy among the scholars of war, who were expelled from the academies for crazy and publishing obscene odes to the windows of the skull, who cowered in unshaven rooms in underwear, burning their money in wastebaskets and listening to the terror through the wall, who got busted in their pubic beards returning through Laredo with a belt of marijuana for New York, who ate fire in paint hotels or drank turpentine in Paradise Alley, death, or purgatoried their torsos night after night with dreams, with drugs, with waking nightmares, alcohol, and endless balls in comparable blind streets of shuddering cloud and lightning in the mind, leaping toward poles of Canada and Patterson, illuminating all the motionless world of time between. Peyote solidities of halls, backyard green tree cemetery dawns, wine drunkenness over the rooftops, storefront burrows of T-head joyride, neon blinking light, traffic, sun and moon and tree vibrations in the roaring winter dusks of Brooklyn, ashcan ranty, and kind king light of mind, who chained themselves to subways for the endless ride from Battery to Holy Bronx on Bezendine until the noise of wheels and children brought them down, shuddering, mouth-racked, and battered bleak of brain, all drained of brilliance in the drear light of zoo, who sank all night in submarine light of Bickford's floated out and sat through the stale beer afternoon in desolate Fugazi's, listening to the crack of doom on the hydrogen jukebox, who talked continuously 70 hours from park to pad to bar to Bellevue to museum to the Brooklyn Bridge, a lost battalion of platonic conversationalists jumping down the stoops, off fire escapes, off windowsills, off Empire State, out of the moon, yakety yakking, screaming, vomiting, whispering facts and memories and anecdotes and eyeball kicks and shocks of hospitals and jails and wars, whole intellects disgorged in total recall for 7 days and nights, with brilliant eyes, meat for the synagogue cast on the pavement, who vanished into nowhere, Zen New Jersey, leaving a trail of ambiguous picture postcards of Atlantic City Hall, suffering eastern sweats and tangerine bone grindings and migraines of China under junk withdrawal in Newark's bleak furnished room, who wandered around and around at midnight in the railroad yard wondering where to go and went, leaving no broken hearts, who lit cigarettes in boxcars, 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 racketing through snow toward lonesome farms in Grandfather Night, who studied Plotinus, Poe, St. John of the Cross, telepathy, and Bop Kabbalah because the cosmos instinctively vibrated at their feet in Kansas, who loaned it through the streets of Idaho, seeking visionary Indian angels who were visionary Indian angels, who thought they were only mad when Baltimore gleamed in supernatural ecstasy, who jumped in limousines with the Chinamen of Oklahoma on the impulse of winter midnight, streetlight small-town rain, who lounged hungry and lonesome through Houston seeking jazz or sex or soup, and followed the brilliant Spaniard to converse about America and eternity, a hopeless task, and so took ship to Africa, who disappeared into the volcanoes of Mexico, leaving behind nothing but the shadows of dungarees and the lava and ash of poetry scattered in fireplace Chicago, who reappeared on the West Coast investigating the FBI in beards and shorts with big pacifist eyes, sexy in their dark skin, passing out incomprehensible leaflets, who burned cigarette holes in their arms protesting the narcotic tobacco haze of capitalism, who distributed super communist pamphlets in Union Square, weeping and undressing, while the sirens of Los Alamos wailed them down and wailed down Wall Street, and the Staten Island Ferry also wailed, who broke down crying in white gymnasiums, naked and trembling before the machinery of other skeletons, who bit detectives in the neck and shrieked with delight in police cars for committing no crime but their own wild cooking pedantry and intoxication, who howled on their knees in the subway and were dragged off the roof waving genitals and manuscripts, who let themselves be obscened by saintly motorcyclists and screamed with joy, and by those human seraphim, the sailors, caresses of Atlantic and Caribbean love, who loved in the morning, in the evenings, in rose gardens, in all the grass of public parks, and who jumped off the Brooklyn Bridge. This actually happened and walked away unknown and forgotten into the ghostly days of Chinatown soup alleyways and fire trucks, not even one free beer, who sang out of their windows in despair, fell out of the subway window, jumped in the filthy Passaic, leaped on Negroes, cried all over the street, danced on broken wine glasses, barefoot, smashed phonograph records of nostalgic European 1930s German jazz, finished the whiskey and threw up groaning into the bloody toilet, moans in their ears and the blast of colossal steam whistles, who barreled down the highways of the past, journeying to each other's hot rod Golgotha, jail solitude, watch, or Birmingham jazz incarnation, who drove cross country 72 hours to find out if I had a vision, or you had a vision, or he had a vision, to find out eternity, who journeyed to Denver, who died in Denver, who came back to Denver and waited in vain, who watched over Denver and brooded and loaned in Denver and finally went away to find out the time, and now Denver is lonesome for her heroes, who fell on their knees in hopeless cathedrals praying for each other's salvation and light and breasts until the soul illuminated its hair for a second, who crashed through their minds in jail waiting for impossible criminals with golden heads and the charm of reality in their hearts, who sang sweet blues to Alcatraz, who retired to Mexico to cultivate a habit, or Rocky Mount to tender Buddha, or Tangiers to boys, or Southern Pacific to the black locomotive, or Harvard to Narcissus to Woodlawn, to the daisy chain or grave, who demanded sanity trials, accusing the radio of hypnotism and were left with their insanity and their hands and a hung jury, who threw potato salad at CCNY lecturers on dadaism and subsequently presented themselves on the granite steps of the madhouse with shaven heads and harlequin speech of suicide, demanding instantaneous lobotomy, and who were given instead the concrete void of insulin, metrazole, electricity, hydrotherapy, psychotherapy, occupational therapy, ping pong, and amnesia, who in humorless protest overturned only one symbolic ping pong table, resting briefly in catatonia, returning years later truly bald, except for a wig of blood and tears and fingers, to the visible madman doom of the wards of the mad towns of the East, Pilgrim States, Rocklands, and Greystone's fetid halls, bickering with the echoes of the soul, rocking and rolling in the midnight solitude, bench, dolmen realms of love, dream of life, a nightmare, bodies turned to stone as heavy as the moon, with Mother finally and the last fantastic book flung out of the tenement window, and the last door closed at 4 a.m., and the last telephone slammed at the wall in reply, and the last furnished room emptied down to the last piece of mental furniture, a yellow paper rose twisted on a wire hanger in the closet, and even that imaginary, nothing but the hopeful little bit of hallucination. Ah, Carl, while you are not safe, I am not safe, and now you're really in the total animal soup of time, and who therefore ran through the icy streets obsessed with a sudden flash of the alchemy of the cemeteries, scattering their salmon freely to whomever came, who hiccuped endlessly, trying to giggle but wound up with a sob behind a partition in a Turkish bath, when the blonde and naked angel came to pierce them with a sword, who lost their love boys to the three old shrews of fate, the one-eyed shrew of the heterosexual dollar, the one-eyed shrew that winks out of the womb, and the one-eyed shrew that does nothing but sit on his ass and snip the intellectual golden threads of the craftsman's loom, who copulated ecstatic and insatiate with a bottle of beer, a sweet sweetheart, a package of cigarettes, a candle, and fell off the bed, and continued along the floor and down the hall, and ended fainting on the wall with a vision of ultimate, eluding the last jism of consciousness, who sweetened a million girls trembling in the sunset, and were red-eyed in the morning, but prepared to sweeten the sunrise, flashing buttocks under barns and naked in the lake, who went out whoring through Colorado in a myriad stolen night cars, N.C., secret hero of these poems, and Adonis of Denver, joy to the memory of his innumerable lays of girls in empty lots and diner backyards, movie houses, rickety rows on mountaintops in caves, or with gaunt waitresses in familiar roadside lonely petticoat upliftings, and especially secret gas station solipsisms of John's and hometown alleys, too, who faded out in vast sordid movies, were shifted in dreams, woke on a sudden Manhattan, and picked themselves up out of basements, hung over with heartless toquet and horrors of Third Avenue iron dreams, and stumbled to unemployment offices, who walked all night with their shoes full of blood on the snowbank docks, waiting for a door in the East River to open to a room full of steam, heat, and opium, who created great suicidal dramas on the apartment cliff banks of the Hudson under the wartime blue floodlight of the moon, and their heads shall be crowned with laurel in oblivion, who ate the lamb's stew of the imagination, or digested the crab at the mounty bottom of the rivers of Bowery, who wept at the romance of the streets with their push carts full of onions and bad music, who sat in boxes breathing in the darkness under the bridge and rose up to build harpsichords in their lofts, who coughed on the sixth floor of Harlem crowned with flame under the tubercular sky, surrounded by orange crates of theology, who scribbled all night rocking and rolling over lofty incantations which in the yellow morning were stanzas of gibberish, who cooked rotten animals, lung, heart, feet, tail, borscht, and tortillas, dreaming of the pure vegetable kingdom, who pledged themselves under meat trucks looking for an egg, who threw their watches off the roof to cast their ballots for eternity outside of time, and alarm clocks fell on their heads every day for the next decade, who cut their wrists three times successfully, unsuccessfully, gave up and were forced to open antique stores where they thought they were growing old and cried, who were burned alive in their innocent flannel suits on Madison Avenue amid blasts of leaden verse and the tanked-up clatter of the iron regiments of fashion and the nitroglycerin shrieks of the fairies of advertising and the mustard gas of sinister intelligent editors, or were run down by the drunken taxicabs of absolute reality. Use of the eclipse catalog, a variable measure and the vibrating plane, who dreamt and made incarnate gaps in time and space through images juxtaposed and trapped the archangel of the soul between two visual images and joined the elemental verbs and set the noun and dash of consciousness together, jumping with the sensation of pater omnipotens, aeterna, deus, to recreate the syntax and measure of poor human prose and stand before you speechless and intelligent and shaking with shame, rejected yet confessing out the soul to conform to the rhythm of thought in his naked and endless head, the madman bum and angel beat in time, unknown yet putting down here what might be left to say in time come after death, and rose reincarnate in the ghostly clothes of jazz in the golden shadow of the band and blew the suffering of America's naked mind for love into an Eli, Eli, Lama, Lama, Sabachthani saxophone cry that shivered the cities down to the last radio with the absolute heart of the poem of life butchered out of their own bodies, good to eat 1,000 years. And that was part one of Howl, and my poor reading of it. You ought to read it, Howl. It's still around. And now, by his mentor, Walt Whitman, from Leaves of Grass, Unnamed Land. Nations 10,000 years before these states, and many times 10,000 years before these states, garnered clusters of ages that men and women like us grew up and traveled their course and passed on. What vast built cities, what orderly republics, what pastoral tribes and nomads, what histories, rulers, heroes, perhaps transcending all others, what laws, customs, wealth, arts, traditions, what sort of marriage, what costumes, what physiology and phrenology, what of liberty and slavery among them, what they thought of death and the soul, who were witty and wise, who beautiful and poetic, who brutish and undeveloped, not a mark, not a record remains, and yet all remains. Oh, I know that those men and women were not for nothing any more than we are for nothing. I know that they belong to the scheme of the world every bit as much as we now belong to it. Afar they stand, yet near to me they stand, some with oval countenances learned and calm, some naked and savage, some like huge collections of insects, some intense, herdsmen, patriarchs, tribes, horsemen, some prowling through woods, some living peaceably on farms, laboring, reaping, filling barns, some traversing paved avenues amid temples, palaces, factories, libraries, shows, courts, theaters, wonderful monuments. Are those billions of men really gone? Are those women of the old experience of the earth gone? Do their lives, cities, arts rest only with us? Did they achieve nothing for good for themselves? I believe of all those men and women that filled the unnamed lands, everyone exists this hour or elsewhere, invisible to us, in exact proportion to what he or she grew from in life and out of what he or she did, felt, became, loved, sinned in life. I believe that was not the end of those nations or any person of them, any more than this shall be the end of my nation or of me, of their languages, governments, marriage, literature, products, games, wars, manners, crimes, prisons, slaves, heroes, poets. I suspect their results curiously await in the yet unseen world, counterparts of what accrued to them in the seen world. I suspect I shall meet them there. I suspect I shall there find each old particular of those unnamed lands. And that was Walt Whitman from Leaves of Grass, which I also recommend reading again if you have not read it before. And now, American Maelstrom by Christopher Kramer. With every man hawking that he is the way, what is a poor soul's path? The maelstrom of competitive heat beating down the grassroots of insanity, like the swollen Yangtze River, leaves little life except on the highway of delusion. Insects will not survive a nuclear war, only the distant stars. Sasquatch doesn't encroach, just wants to range in memory's trust. However, teaching humans is the business of eternity. Each other's occasional cold shoulders just smolder like hell. Mongoose chasing scorpions cover the ground like strutting hippies, while downed souls act like wolves pissing around in rock quarries. I am feeling murdered, and it is firing back everywhere. P.S. Move out, General Patton roars, and the antimatter fans hit the shan. Patterns of power and annihilist plans move prophets to curse. Terrify yourself, says God, you little spot of bloody dementia. You gotta, how you gonna? Oh, baby, let's go at it. Purple remains of love at the Fillmore East. Why don't we all want to live more lovely lives? Sagacious humor and patience bide time in purple robes. It is medicine time. My temper must have a decent end. I have been scaring myself to perdition's gate, but still I sometimes feel dead too. Seems like God won't allow the death thing for very long. God, 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 God sleeps in a bog, 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 bog. Let's just not murder the boss morning. Oh, forsworn and stupid it is. Strike not these natty Britons, for the wheels of justice roll with the stars. My God, who has stolen my wings but the jealous folk? grounded and tortured my strength, requite from the grace of Christ. What are we to this man but vexation, graceless and demanding death, control freaks breaking golf clubs over his head and tossing cups of the river Sty. Pain, oh pain, it is mercy I seek, but empathy rebounds upon popular affection. I throw my fate into hell and it comes back mercurial and steely, life but aging. I pray to my abandoned modern world, oh strike me less, for I fear I am dying. What thought I my seed, but the rocket-tipped rainbow of the Covenant's Ark. Mercy, oh my God, mercy, chatty to chatty, molted and boiling cast, and sent to the myriads of universal strength. Can I love myself some of the time while I hate absorbing cold-hearted law? But I know its purpose has a love behind it, prudent and caring, but I lose my grasp. When the sun starts raging, nowhere to run, everywhere to be just, love myself. And that was American Maelstrom by Christopher Kramer of Astoria. And April is KMUN's natal month, 2 days after normal tax day. Postpone this plague year to July, and 2 days before the shot heard round the world at Concord and Lexington. KMUN is free radio, heard round the Columbia Pacific for 37 years this April 17th. One of the hallmarks of KMUN's history occurred on April Fool's Day, 1988, just before its fifth birthday. Volunteer programmer and local musician with the local rock band Pagan Pancakes, Kevin Violette essentially pranked the morning classical music program and played 3 hours that day straight of heavy metal rock records on the air. This caused major outrage among classical aficionados. Lynching was mentioned, which indirectly led to KMUN's alternate all-classical station, KCPB. Everybody probably has a KMUN story to share during this unique and life-preserving sabbatical. This might also be a good opportunity to check out the 25th Amendment to the Constitution. You know, the one about removing an unfit president of the USA, and certainly of a pandemic. Stay safe. Protecting yourself protects everybody else. This is Michael McCusker.